Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
I'm Kim Grounds of DogMan.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Day two, spring football 2024 is on the blustery shores of Lake Washington. First practice was yesterday, Wednesday, but Tuesday was actually a nice day. Monday was a nice day. Sunday was a nice day, but it's football weather. It was yesterday and it was today. Was today as bad as it was yesterday with the cold and the wind?
Oh, absolutely. It was because you had the added element of rain too added onto it. It wasn't pouring, but it was just enough to make the chill in the air pretty bad.
Yeah. There weren't nearly as many fans. I think the second time around, it's like, yeah, we've seen what we need.
20 people in
maybe,
the stands,
maybe, and a lot of them were parents of players. So
it's kind of like in the desert. They say it's a dry heat in Seattle. It's a wet cold.
Oh my gosh!
And it was a wet cold out here the last couple of days. And you didn't get a chance to hear Jed Fish as he was walking off the field. He looks at us and laughs. He goes, and he was just shaking his head, cracking up. He goes, "You thought we were going to be inside, didn't you?" So
yeah.
And then he goes, and then I looked at the calendar and said that we got to go to Penn State in November. So I answered that question.
Yeah. Well, Jed Fish had a coat on today. He didn't yesterday. He's a quick learner.
I'm trying to figure out if he actually ever took his hands out of his pockets. Because it was cold enough that I could easily see those guys. If they didn't have to, they didn't need to be going all gestury and stuff. So it was, it definitely was not, it was more indicative of what you would feel like in the fall as opposed to an April day.
Yeah, I mean, it's chilly out there. When you take a look at the players, they're wearing the same clothes. I mean, they're wearing their jersey and their pads, and they don't have their warm weather gear on. They've got shorts on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you guys mentioned it yesterday, but one of the biggest things for spring ball that we're seeing this year, we've been doing this since 1997, something we have never, ever seen. Names on the back of the practice jerseys.
Yeah.
Are they actual practice jerseys?
So, yes, they are. So we were talking with Jeff Bechtold, the media SID for the football team, and he basically said that they are not the normal practice jerseys. These are jerseys that fit just like the regular jerseys do, but they're just practice jerseys.
They certainly look like the real thing.
And it sounds like Jed Fish wants them to practice in the stuff that they're going to wear.
Sure. You want to know my theory behind it? It's not to help the fans and the media. I don't think the coaches know all these new guys
that
are.
That might be true.
Well, half of me wondered if there was something to the idea of, we get to see. Because, back in the day, if they just had the regular practice jerseys that had no names in the back, they put the names.
Masking tape.
They put the masking tape with the names on top of the helmets. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they had to look at the helmet. And even then, it's like, okay, you might use a Sharpie, but it's not exactly the easiest thing to look at.
Well, I think that was the plan this year, but Bart Fulmer's no longer here to write the names on the masking
tape. That's not
true.
He's here, but he's just not
He's
doing
not in
football.
Charge of the equipment anymore.
Yeah. No. So, we're not complaining about the weather, just trying to set the scene for what we're dealing with, especially for
those. Oh, no, you're complaining about the weather.
Oh, no, I bundled up today, dude. I got so many layers on. I got the hand warmers. Scott stole one of my hand warmers.
You mentioned how many layers you had yesterday, too.
I didn't have anywhere near as many as I had today. Okay. I got a backpack in my car strictly for cold weather gear.
There's one guy here who didn't have hand warmers.
Yeah.
I'm raising my hand.
Yeah, well.
I will stipulate to that. I'm more than happy to take the hand warmer because my hands are frozen.
But I'll confess.
Trying to text on my phone with frozen fingers, that's not an easy thing.
Guess who got on Amazon halfway through practice to order hand warmers?
You.
Yeah. Raising my hand.
Yeah. Just a couple things that stood out to me. Just in the first 2 days, two things that stood out to me, and I'll get it from you guys too. But number one, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm just mesmerized with Damond Williams, the freshman quarterback, the way he runs, and he throws such a pretty ball. So he's not left-handed by Michael Penix, but the way he spins the ball is reminiscent of Michael Penix. And the other thing is Jonah Coleman, the transfer running back. I don't think Washington's ever had a guy that looks like that. And I was talking to some guys, who does he look like? When was the last time we saw a running back that was much of a bowling ball in, as him? And the name came up, Maurice Jones-Drew. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he, how tall is he? 5'6", maybe?
No, I was thinking more like 5'8 or 5'9", but yeah.
And 200 and...
25 pounds.
You guys probably see eye to eye, I bet.
Is he taller than Nate?
No.
Okay, well,
he would be.
I'm as tall.
He'd be
Nate.
Taller. He'd be taller than Nate.
Nate and I are all eyeball.
That's one.
But I mean, wait till you guys get a load of this guy. His lower body. Oh my God, he is thick.
But so. After practice, Jed Fish kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, you asked him specifically if that's what he looked like at Arizona. He's like, yeah, that's what he looked like. And he goes, but you never know. He goes, we'll get him to the weight he needs to be at. So I think, does that mean that maybe he's a little thicker than maybe those guys expected? I don't know. I think that having not seen him in the flesh until yesterday, it was difficult to know, because seeing him watch in the game on TV when Washington played at Arizona, he didn't look that bowling ballish to me. He was tough. He was physical. He broke runs, but he didn't look that low to the ground and that much of a load.
Yeah. Who was the running back at Oregon State? This small guy. Playing the NFL.
Jaquizz Rogers?
Yeah. I think he's thicker than Jaquizz.
Oh, Jaquizz wasn't that big.
Yeah. No, Jaquizz was tiny all the way around.
205, 210,
but
maybe.
He was also like 5'6", 5'5", maybe?
Yeah, no, this guy is, it's going to be interesting to see him in contact. So, yeah. Give me two thoughts, just jumping out at you first 2 days, Scott.
First 2 days is, I mean, the big thing for me was just the amount of turnover. You know, I was talking with some people on the sidelines. We've never seen a turnover like this. I mean,
roster turnover.
You're
not talking about physical football.
No, roster turnover has just been insane. I mean, trying to get used to it, and then, I mean, how many of the players changed numbers from last year? So, I mean, it's like I'm constantly looking. Okay, that's who it is. Okay. I mean, I'll get used to it. I mean, we do it every year, but it's just, wow. You know, we've never had this much turnover. And heck, you know, after spring ball is over with, we're probably going to have, you know, a combined 10 to 20 guys that are going to either leave or come onto the team. So it's just going to be – it's going to be really interesting. I think the second thing is, I mean, Damon Williams to me – and look, I don't think he's outshining Will Rogers from a play standpoint. But just from what I didn't have any expectations about what Damon Williams was going to look like and how he threw the ball. He has – I don't know if I've ever seen a freshman quarterback show up and throw the ball like this guy does. It's pretty special.
Yeah, no, he's. I mean, they have different arm strength, Will Rogers and Damon Williams. But, you know, before spring ball, about a month ago, I was talking to one of the coaches coming up, and he says they think that they stole him because they think he is elite. And we saw – I'm not saying he's elite, but he's definitely got some
not
of those
yet,
some – he's definitely trending. He's got some traits, Chris. And he looks a little bit like a Fifita, you know, down at Arizona.
Well, I was going to say, when Tet McMillan and Noah Fifita made the decisions to stay at Arizona, I know a lot of Washington fans were really, really disappointed, because if there was a guy that had playmaking ability in the Pac-12 level and it could translate, especially in an offense that was tailor-made by coaches that recruited him, it would be to come to Washington and coach with Fish and Doherty and Brennan Carroll. So that when that happened and he decided to stay, that was disappointing. But I'm telling you, Damon Williams might be as close to Noah Fifita as they could have possibly gotten.
Because we'd heard some talk, you know, and everybody wants to say sour grapes, but we'd heard some talk that maybe the coaches didn't really necessarily encourage Fifita to come up here. But I think that might be because they knew what they had in Damon Williams.
Well, there's that. I don't know if I buy that 100%, because I think, you know, right now they have 3 scholarship quarterbacks, Kim. They can always use more, and they're going to have to get another one in the portal. That said, they may be too similar, if that makes sense, because Will Rogers is certainly different. Marmar is certainly different. Demarcus Davis, he's certainly different than those two guys. But right now, Damon Williams is pretty much the clear quarterback two, and I still think Will Rogers is easy the quarterback one. I mean, he's just too experienced and too savvy and has too much of an all-around game to be ignored. But, man, to have – what this honestly reminds me of, and this is going to go way back, but hopefully I think at least with you, Kim, it would make sense. This reminds me of the setup that they had at the very end of the Lambright campaign when you had Brock Huard as the savvy guy, the big guy, the pocket guy. But then who was right behind him? Marcus Tuiasosopo. Marcus Tuiasosopo and Damon Williams right now aren't that dissimilar. It's just that Marcus is a little bit bigger. That's about it.
Yeah, and then you throw,
Demarcus Davis.
Yeah, when you throw him in there, I mean, he looks like an athlete. I mean, what is he? How big is he, Scott?
6'3". 6'3", and probably, I'd say, right around 200 pounds.
He just looks like an athlete.
Yeah, he's got potential to be a really good quarterback down the road. He's a step or two behind.
Yeah, I mean, these guys would love to keep Austin Mack, but when Austin Mack went to Alabama, it's like, if you keep Demarcus Davis, that's as close as, again, this is, if you want to try to find a guy that fits the bill physically that you can mold into the quarterback you want him to be, that's Marmar.
Yeah, and, you know, staying on the quarterbacks, it's kind of interesting when we asked Brendan Carroll, you know, what's going to, for the casual fan, you know, taking a look at the offensive line and the offense, what's the biggest difference the fans are going to see? And he talked about being under center a lot more, and they don't have a true center on this roster right now, and that's obviously shown.
Well, they have a true center on the roster. He's just not healthy. Yeah. That's Landon Hatchett. But
I'd also argue they have a true center, but he's a walk-on
in
Parker Cross. I think right now, if they were playing a game tomorrow, I'd almost be convinced that Parker Cross might be their best option in terms of consistent snapping both behind center and in the shotgun.
We've seen a lot of drop snaps.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. Saw one today.
Well, and that's the thing. To defend the centers for a minute, the quarterbacks haven't necessarily been clean as well. Mm-hmm. I've seen a bunch of balls on the ground, and it wasn't because the snaps were bad.
Well, yeah, today there was one where Damon Williams got kind of a little miffed that he either miffed it himself or miffed that the exchange was bad, because I think he saw a play that was going to be open and he didn't make the play. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's spring and you want it to be better, but it's not going to be there. You've just got a bunch of guys other than Parker Cross who've never probably snapped a ball in their life. You know, Michael Watkins comes in his first day, his first practice as a high school or as a player, and he's only been at the University of Washington for a week and a half, and he's already snapping a ball, and he's got Javon Parker and Jacob Bandis or whoever else Valdez. All these guys lined up across from him. You're just like, welcome to college, kid. You know, I mean, it's one of those.
But it is interesting. Brendan Carroll did talk to you, Kim, post practice about the idea that even though they may be young and they're inexperienced as far as game reps and things like that, because Drew has a party, he's the most experienced guy there, and at San Diego State, he only played 6 games.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what you're talking about. That's the extent of the experience on this and offensive line.
And the most experienced returning player on the offensive line? Zach Henning.
Well, right, in terms of healthy. Yeah. Now, guard Memelar and Landon Hatchett. I mean, Hatchett played last year a bunch. But the bottom line is it's Carroll said it bodes well for the future right now in terms of even the young guys. They're trying to get together. They're trying to work on each other. They're trying to get each other better. And he goes, I'm really, really encouraged by that, because we haven't necessarily promoted that. That's part of the culture that's been here and part of the leadership that continues to grow.
See, one of the things that's interesting, Scott, did you count how many offensive linemen they have on the roster right now? Is it 10?
Well, they have 10 functional players.
There's 12 scholarship players.
Okay. So. And Brendan Carroll said he wants 15 or 16.
Yeah.
So what I think is going to be interesting is if they bring in and they get that number up to 15 or 16, are there any, there's no seniors included in that?
Well, there could be. I mean, so a guy by the name of Marcus Bryant from SMU is going to be in for an official visit this weekend.
Right.
He would be a grad transfer.
I'm just looking at recruiting for the following year.
Oh, for the following year? Well,
if they get the number up to 15, 16, and only one leaves or two leaves?
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to go out and they're going to try and find 3 grad transfers. That's my opinion. I think
that's what they need.
That's what they're going to need.
Yeah, you're not worried about attrition after the season. You want to make sure your offensive line makes it through the season.
Here's the thing, though. what people need to understand, and I've explained this in a blog, I'm almost thinking I'm going to include it in every blog, is that just because a guy is signed to the University of Washington to play in the spring does not mean he will be there in the fall. Just because he's committed and signed with Washington does not mean, the way that they have things set up right now, and it's really bad for the game in the long run because fans are just never going to get invested in players and things like that, because you can never count on any depth. The coaches are going to recruit so that they have the amount of guys they want at each position. And if they want 15 to 16, they're going to have to over-recruit at that position, because you always have to assume that someone who's a sophomore and not getting a lot of playing time is probably going to leave your program.
And you're not even talking about injuries.
No.
Right now they got two guys that have been hurt and been hurt for quite a while. And yeah. So you almost have to factor in some injuries, especially in the trenches when those guys, you know, they're getting after it.
Yeah, guard Memelar and mm-hmm. Landon Hatchett are the two. Did Memelar take some snaps last year at center?
No. He only played, what, two games before he got hurt?
He took a couple snaps today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's all hands on deck when it comes to center.
No, it was interesting. But like we said, he was all, as a party said, he was all set to go to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then the coaches came up here, so it made it easy for them.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Definitely. Is he the biggest guy they've got on the offensive line?
He looks it.
I don't know. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the guy who's got the potential to be the biggest is Sione Faasolo, because he's 6'8", and he's got the frame to be 330 pretty easily. Well,
the biggest guy they're going to have in the fall is a guy who's not here yet, which is the true freshman, Hilkema. It's like 6'8", 320, 6'8", 315.
And David Boyajian, he's going to be – he's about 6'7", 300.
Yeah. It's really wild. I mean, we're mentioning these names, and I bet most of the people listening to this never even heard of these guys.
Hey, Kim, I'm going to be honest with you. You probably don't know a lot of these names. I mean, you have a lot on your plate, and so you, unless a guy's playing a lot.
Whose number? How many times did you hear that from you? Who is number?
Yeah.
Who is number?
Hey, I remember when we were doing the podcast about the ADs and stuff, and the interim AD is not Aaron O'Donnell. It's Aaron O'Connell.
Yeah.
It's close enough.
Okay. So there we go.
You got the gist.
I got the gist all right. I knew who you were talking about. Yeah, I'm not sure the people listening knew.
I mean, it's just – I mean, I'm watching this offensive line, and this is nothing against the guys. I think Hatchett, I think Faasolo, I think Tafai, Kali Tafai – I think all these guys have great futures, but if they're going to get guys, so I don't want to sound like a doomsday guy, but if they didn't replace and they could only roll out the 10 that they or 12 that they have, this team's winning two games. They're just going to get rolled. I mean, you're talking about, you know, when we're writing our practice live updates and posts and things like that, I felt like everyone was sack Durfee, sack Alenius Davis, sack for whoever it was that was getting in. The quarterbacks just have no time. There's no running room for the tailbacks to really very much. Yeah. So I mean, it's really unfair to these guys, right now. Well, the good thing is these guys, and like Brendan Carroll alluded to, this is good because they're getting reps.
Yeah, he says there's a lot of situations where guys get put into roles that they aren't accustomed to. They're mm-hmm. getting out of their comfort zone. They're maybe doing stuff earlier than they thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you always say, Kim, drinking water through a fire hose.
Yeah. Yeah.
These guys aren't drinking water through a fire hose. Their mouths are getting pushed into Lake Washington right now, and it's not pretty.
Yeah.
And even when Fish said, he fully admitted, these guys know what they're up against. Fish said flat out, he goes, if we didn't have the ability to go out and get more guys before the season started through mm-hmm. the portal, he goes, I'd absolutely be worried, 100%.
And the tone he said that with, the way I interpreted that, he's got a couple guys in his back pocket already.
Well, it's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
It's a matter of fact. Yeah. And so, like you said, Scott, the SMU transfer, that could be a guy they've got in their back pocket. Who knows?
There's a possibility that two guys from Arizona who opted to pull their names out of the portal.
Oh, yeah. Could be Polito, back in the freshman.
Polito and Savianaya.
Savianaya.
Yeah.
He would be the real.
Yeah, those two guys could always be possibilities to leave, too. So I'm not saying we know. We don't.
Yeah.
But, those would seem like logical choices if they don't feel comfortable staying at Arizona.
So, Scott, portal opens on April 15th. Give me a date on when you think they'll get the first commitment from an offensive lineman.
I guess a lot of it's going to depend on when that lineman's school's spring football ends. So some are ending soon, like within the next week or two.
Well, we talked about this yesterday, Ken. Washington's going to be in the middle of their spring football when the portal opens, which means not only are they going to have the ability to host visitors to see, they get practice, a chance to see the practice and everything, but guys that are current players on the team are going to have to start thinking about making decisions because they're going to have to decide to go into the portal before the spring game even happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that – I mean, it's the most asinine thing ever.
Well, we talked about Cam Williams, remember, back in the day?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Do you remember if Cam Williams ended up anywhere?
Georgia Southern. You're talking about the safety?
Oh, that's right. He went with Will Harris. Will Harris,
But he put his name in the portal and still practiced with the team.
Yep. I think what you're going to find – is there's going to be a lot of discussions behind the scene. And I think anyone that decides they want to go in the portal is probably going to be allowed to and kind of live in that dual world where they're going to, because Washington needs bodies too. And I think half those guys, they're probably like, well, we would like to see how this goes for you because maybe the best option is for you to stay. Now, there may be other guys that are clear transfer possibilities and they'll probably have a different conversation with those players. But it's just, it's going to make for some uncomfortable discussions. Let's put it that way.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
We haven't talked much about the defense because I've been finding myself most of the time, focusing on the offense. Anything on defense that you're really seeing, Scott?
A lot of it's the learning and the teaching. Today, I went to the East Field when the defense was over there doing position drills, and Robert Ballo was running his linebackers through stuff, and you can hear him coaching up. You can tell it's different. It's not better or worse than what we saw the last couple of years with Kalen DeBoer. It's just different. You know, they're looking for different things from their guys. The defense that Steve Belichick is putting in is – a lot different than what they had for the last couple of years. So it's going to be really interesting. Washington's got some long athletic guys in that secondary now. Jabbar Muhammad, as good as he was so small. You know, they don't have that anymore. They don't have a tiny guy playing. I mean, Leroy Bryant is the one, and Dyson McCutcheon are two guys that you could say are the smallest guys, but they are very much the exceptions to the rule. Yeah. And by the way, Dyson McCutcheon had a quote-unquote sack today, got in on a blitz. He's playing slot corner. But, when you watch these guys out there and the way they're teaching, Vinny Sancieri was teaching. So the corners were on the other side of the East Field. The safeties and linebackers were on the nearest side. And so I rotated to both of those. And you could listen to the way they were teaching them. And hey, got to extend your arm. This is where I want your hand placed. Sancieri took the player's hand and put it right on his chest. This is where you need to be hitting the guy when you're, you know, to fend him off and things like that. So it's real interesting watching that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing that's really stood out to me, and this is overall, but I think it's especially true on defense and especially true when talking to Steve Belichick about what he hoped to accomplish during spring. It's like a full peel back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like it's akin to stripping a wall down to its bare essence and then figuring out what kind
to
of paint
studs,
you want to put. Just putting everything back together after stripping it all apart and trying to create something new. What that means is they're literally doing things half speed at the fastest.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to find is you might have gravitated more towards the offense, Kim, because they were doing things maybe a little bit more kind of thud tempo-ish. But if you went to the East Field, and I watched it from up top, and man, they really, they go, I mean, they are dialed in on details. Even if it means the pace doesn't exist, they are going to make sure you know exactly what your footwork's supposed to be, what your technique, what your shade's supposed to be, inside out, what shoulder you're focused on. Everything they can talk about, they were working with.
The one thing that we can say about that, though, is aside from Kafusi, Jason Kafusi, the defensive, well, I guess Jay Rich, too, but the defensive staff is all different. Yeah. Bala didn't coach with Jed Fish. Steve Belichick didn't coach with Fish, and neither did Sunseri. Yeah. And so, you know, that's why it's good to have Isaiah Ward and Russell Davis up front, so they know exactly what to expect from. But it's a whole new defense too. Yeah. Well, it's different than what Johnny Nansen and who was the other? I can't remember.
Dwayne Aquina
were running.
Washington grad.
So
well,
yeah.
And on the back end, you've got Ephesians Prysock. You've got now Jordan Shaw. I don't know how much of the defense he would have gotten when he was in his transfer situation. And Raheem Wright. I mean, he's a high school player. You know, you've got some guys with Arizona connections, but Prysock's pretty much the only one that actually played for
but
these guys.
But on the offensive side of the ball, that whole staff, I think, came over, right? Doherty, Pow, Carroll, and
Scotty Graham.
And then Jed
Fish.
Kevin
Cummings.
And Kevin Cummings. So they've got everybody on that. So I think maybe offensively, it's the same offense. So it's not like these coaches are learning a new offense, whereas Kafusi and Jay Rich are learning a new defense along with the guys that they brought in that weren't there.
Yeah, so. And one more point before we move on from the defense or wherever you want to go with this, Kim. I think, you know, I remember back in the days of Coach Pete where he talked about that whole part-whole method in practicing. Like, they'd come together in the beginning. Like, DeBoer and those guys always wanted to have a team period to start. These guys aren't as much. No. But I still feel like it's a whole, it's kind of a whole part-whole method. Because they bring the guys together to start in Husky Stadium, and then they had the offense in Husky Stadium, they had the defense on the East Field, and they were working on their own things, and then they would come back together for the team periods in Husky Stadium. So there was a kind of a hole when everyone was together, then they'd split apart, get their installs, get their fundamentals, their individual drills, and then they'd come back to do the team period. So I see some of those types of methods that are going on that are similar to what I saw with Coach Pete.
And the other thing, and I don't know if you heard, you know, Coach Fish talk about this yesterday, you know, they've got the Dempsey, they've got the East Field, and then they've got Husky Stadium. He said he didn't like the team practicing inside the stadium. Yeah. He said, you know, that's kind of like that's a holy place. So he's not real big on them practicing inside Husky Stadium. Now, the East Field is always going to be available, but there's a lot of usage for the Dempsey Indoor. The softball team uses it. The track team uses it. The baseball team uses it. Everybody uses that. So it's going to be, you know, interesting to see how they handle that. So
yeah, I don't know if we ever asked Coach P or DeBoer or any of those guys, you know, whether or not they cared about practicing at Husky Stadium or not, because I think honestly it's just a necessity. There's just no room.
Yeah,
it's the East Field and Husky Stadium. Those are the two things. It's not like you're out in the middle of Oklahoma or Texas where you've got five practice fields where you can go anywhere you want anytime. You can split things up 10 ways if you want.
You know, all the practices are open. Just a reminder to the fans, and Saturday is going to be full pads, whatever that means these days. They add thigh pads and shoulder pads.
It won't be full pads.
Yeah.
They won't be hitting.
But what I'm looking forward to, I've been looking forward to this for quite a while. Saturday, post-practice, we get Steve Belichick.
Yeah. I still have the over-under at 100 words.
I was going to say, this could be the can I transcribe Steve Belichick?
Yeah. Yeah, ask me a question I'll give you the Steve Belichick answer.
Hey, Steve, what do you think of the city of Seattle?
Yeah, and I feel like it's a broken record because we got it. Like
good.
I said, I don't feel good harping on him about this because it really ultimately he's going to be judged by what happens on the field. And matter of fact is he was a play caller for arguably the top defense the last, what, 4 or 5 years? In the NFL.
Yeah.
I think the guy could call a game. I think he understands a little bit about defense. Just because he isn't like gregarious and he's a lot like his dad when it comes to the media.
If we can have fun with him, I'm all in.
Yeah, but it's not really fun. It doesn't feel like fun. Yeah, I think it was fun the first time. I don't think the third or fourth time.
I'm signing up to transcribe Belichick quote days. So that's because for people who don't know, transcribing is my least favorite part of our job. I mean, it's just not fun. We do it because we have to do it.
What I'm going to be curious about, is who are the two players that they're going to have with Steve Belichick
on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah.
That's easy.
Prysock?
No. Carson Bruner?
But that's the point. The point is he coaches every single one. He doesn't have a set position group. He's roving around. He's got a roaming kind of position. Like today, he spent most of like a good couple team periods in the East field looking just at the cornerbacks and working with them.
Yeah.
So will it be just cornerbacks?
I think it's Prysock. I bet Prysock because he's used to it. Maybe
Prysock and Elijah Jackson?
Yeah, I was thinking something like that.
Okay. All right. So then what happens when Coach Richardson comes to grace us?
It's Jordan Shaw, then it's Thaddeus Dixon.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
Before we wrap this up and you give final thoughts, any other things jumping out of practice?
Not a lot. Today, by the way, we didn't mention Demetrius Manning was there, the big offensive lineman, 2025 offensive lineman from Bellevue was there.
Big kid.
Does not have an offer from Washington, but yes, very large gentleman. Jake Flores was there too. We're pretty sure we saw him. We're not 100%, but and then Troy Fautanu was on the sidelines.
Yeah, he showed up. I don't think he was there the whole practice. He just kind of showed up.
Yeah, but cold. Yeah, it was cold. Yeah, so but no, I mean, as far as you know, I've seen enough spring practice to know this one looks a lot like what we've seen from other spring practices. They're doing their install. They're working through stuff. These coaches are getting to know their new players. It's just a lot of feeling out. If you guys come out, you watch a practice, first of all, bundle up. Second of all, just don't expect to see a ton of full speed stuff right now because these people are all still getting to know each other.
Go ahead and wrap it up, Chris Fetters.
Yeah, I was just going to say a lot of the same things Scott just said. I would also say this feel, like I said, stripping it all back to the studs, getting back to basics, fundamentals. It's interesting to watch, you know, from the media perspective, but it's not great for us in terms of reporting stuff because there isn't a ton to report on. Because like I said, guys are literally going half speed or less. They're literally just running through some things, through some concepts, through some schemes, whether that's install or just basic fundamentals. You know, there are a number of things that we can talk about in the team periods, and I think we did that in the live thread. You know, a couple of the walk-on receivers had nice days today. I thought Camden Sermon had a nice day. I thought Luke Lucchini had a couple nice catches. You know, running the ball, you know, they can't tackle. They can't even really hit. So it's really difficult to see how effective some of these guys are. But they're rolling through all these guys. I mean, Adam Muhammad, the true freshman, got carries today, just like Tybo Rogers did, just like Daniel Ngata had a bunch of carries today behind Jonah Coleman. So, you know, there are things to watch. I think Jordan Shaw had a pick. I want to say Curly Reed had a pick. So there are some things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, when, you know, first couple days, this, guys, seriously, what this felt like to me, today's practice, was that the guys finally got turns on tape. They rolled out the tape to the team or the individual position groups, and all the coaches were like, boy, do we have a lot to work on tomorrow. And that's exactly what they did today.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Scott Eklund, wrap it up.
He already did.
I already did.
You're up already? Yeah. All right. looking forward to Saturday. I expect the weather to be a little bit better than it has, but not tremendously better. But it's just, Chris, this is the ninth head coaching staff that we've dealt with dealing with brand new players, brand new offense, brand new defense. We've been through this a lot. I'd say that this coaching staff seems a little bit further ahead. And the vibe I get, it's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. I think, you know, they keep on talking NFL, NFL, NFL. And I've been to Seahawk practices, and yeah, it seems more like an NFL team practice. So
I'll also say real quick, Kim, listening to Brennan Carroll and transcribing his stuff,
yeah,
that's as close as I'll probably ever get to transcribing what Pete Carroll must be like.
He sounds like him.
In his manner of speaking and the way he phrases things, straight out of the Pete Carroll playbook. I mean, that is father, son, identical.
It is funny because, you know, you take a look at Steve Belichick and you listen to him, he sounds like his dad.
Identical.
And Brandon Carroll's, he's quite a bit bigger than his dad, though.
He is.
He's quite a bit bigger. He's a big dude. So looking forward to Saturday. Just looking forward to the weather getting a little bit better. And I know it's spring ball, but keep an eye on basketball things. They got a commitment from a guard from Rice yesterday, expecting a couple more possibly from Utah State coming in, and it's busy. There's a couple of assistant coaches. I think Tony Bland is going to be added to the staff, but there's a lot going on there, so we'll see what's going on. But there's going to be a lot of basketball stuff going on, and expect me to be able to update you guys a little bit more on exactly what's going on middle of next week with basketball. We'll have a lot more ideas. Andy Enfield, of course, left USC. He went to SMU. And Jen Cohen, I got a text from her this morning. I'm in Arkansas hiring a coach. So she hired Eric Musselman, you know, the coach from Arkansas, which is where Keon Menefield transferred to. Didn't play much, and he entered the portal again. Could we see Keon Menefield back at USC? So
I don't know. All I know is that her last two coaching searches led her to Fresno and Arkansas.
I was kind of surprised. I sent her, did you hire the coach, or did Bronny hire the coach? I didn't get a response
Bronny's in the portal.
No, he's not.
That's what they're saying.
He said he was going to, but he's not. Okay. So evidently, so.
What a S show that is.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
You think? So.
I think he needs to get away from it.
Were you here for the USC game,
yes,
Chris? Do you remember we walked in, and just because Bronny James was here, how much added security they had?
It was atmosphere.
It was ridiculous.
For a game that didn't mean anything, there were a lot of people there.
Yeah. For a guy that averages 5 points a game. So, anyways, keep it booked here. We've got how many spring practices are there?
There are 15 total. Spring. We've had two, one that will be closed completely on the 30 on the first.
We're not asking him to do math, yeah, are we?
No,
so
math
that
class.
That means we have 12 practices left to view.
We'll be here at everyone, and we'll be here at every practice, and nobody's going to cover it better than the guys.
Unless they change the days on us. No more changing days. Yeah. That's what I got to say. Yeah. I get it that it was for a solemn reason, and so I'm not making that much of a joke, but please don't change anymore. I've got my schedule worked out as good as I can right now. Right. Let's do it.
So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.